a couple of some order of business. One, Gabor Zareb asked to dedicate the shir in for the refuah shleim of his mother Miriam Bat Avraham and his rabbi Rav Riel ben Hana and Yosef Yeshua ben Rizal. And Andy Neff also is dedicating the shir. It's his father's third yahrzeit, Aaron ben Baruch, that his father Shavon Elias in the Shama. There's also a little boy who's right now going through a very difficult medical situation, and his name is Daniel Rafael, that was added, Ben Leia, and Amir Tzashem will also have Rufuah Shleima. So, let us begin. The problem with today's shiur is there's going to be lots and lots and lots of moving parts, and I'm going to try to make it as easy as I can. I just have my doubt, you know, how much I'll be successful, but I'm going to try. And let's just begin. Moshe, and we are entering the story in the middle. Moshe ya ra'e etzon yitro chotno kohen midyan. So there's so much over here. And again, we skip the first two chapters, which are really important. First two chapters, things happened, including things happened to Am Yisrael, so there's slavery, and things happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. And probably the most important thing that happened to him is that he tried to redeem the people. I may be overstating that, but I'm not sure if I am. Which means there was an attempt. He left the palace and he went to seek his brothers and he tried to help. And the next thing you know, he was reported on, and he was told on. And next thing you know, there's a death sentence on him. So I can imagine, you know, Moshe on the one hand, who most likely was raised by his parents to believe that there is a purpose in him going, you know, being raised in this palace, and God has his ways, and therefore it seems quite clear that Moshe should be using his position in order to help Am Yisrael, and he does, except for one problem. And that problem is that Am Yisrael, as far as the small sample that he has met, were not necessarily willing or ready to be helped. And he essentially makes what is a really bad career move. He loses his status in the palace, you know, to the extent that I've said before, when it says Vayachet HaMitzri, then he struck the Egyptian, one could well say that he killed the Egyptian within him. There is no Egyptian left anymore, because that was the ramification of what took place over here. And Moshe then wanders away, and he goes and he lives with Yitro, and it sounds like he's resigned to that sometimes life is surprising, and he thought his role was one thing, and it turns out that his role is, instead of being a shepherd of the Jewish people, his role is to be a shepherd, which really essentially catches us up to where we are right now. Moshe Ra'otzon Yitro, Chotno Kohen Midyan. And we don't know what Kohen Midyad means, but we suspect we know what it means, because the word Kohen could be a person of importance and power, or it could be a religious word. And if it's a religious word, then it's more interesting, because then Moshe has sort of signed up with his joining and working for and with his father-in-law. Again, even though there's no religious or clear religious indication of what Moshe's role would be, and that's why the second half of the verse is really interesting. But you know, and again, Midian is an interesting choice, because Midian is a son of Avram Avinu. So if the Jewish people are not going to choose him, and he has no choice of staying in Egypt, he goes to family. And then you just start thinking, so what were the options? The options would have been to go to Yishmael, would have been to go to Esav, or to go to Midian. So Midian is an interesting choice, because there may well be the least amount of animosity between Midian and his extended family, the Jewish people, compared to Esav or to Yishmael. So I say that as just, you know, thinking out loud. And but what's really interesting to us is the continuation, is Vayavo el Hara Elokim Chareva. So is that something which is it an accident? Is it purposeful? Does he go to this place because he knows it is some kind of a Har Elohim? It is some kind of a religious place? Or is this the place that he happens to wander by? And later on, we're going to be told what the significance is, which means that it's going to become Chorev, going to become Sinai. Vayira Malach Hashem Elav, and God appears to him through an angel. And again, you know, just like all the other characters that we met in Bereshit, it's always interesting what they do prior to the first revelation and then post the revelation. I mean, we have Yaakov, a really interesting life beforehand, and then he has the revelation. And we have Avraham before the revelation, and then the revelation, although with Avraham it's a little bit more challenging. Over here we have Moshe. Everything till now which he has done is because of, I would say, of the way that he was raised, what his mother had taught him. Vayar, and he sees Vine Hasna Boer Baish, Vasna Inenu Ukal. And over here there is this revelation, and the revelation is a, for lack of a better term, a burning bush which is not consumed. And one of the things we're gonna need to pay attention to is really every single element which takes place in this narrative, and then we'll try and understand the significance of it. So far he gets to a place which is called Chorev. It's described as Har Elohim. He sees there a vision, and the vision is one of a bush which is burning. What is the significance? There will be a midrashic suggestion that the word Sinai comes from the word Sneh. Vayar Moshe, and Moshe sees, Asura na ve'erat amareh hagadol hazeh, madu lo yivar ha'sneh, and Moshe sees this. It catches his attention. And, you know, for us, when we know that this place will later on be known as Sinai, we know the events that will take place at Sinai, and part of Sinai will be a place of revelation on the one hand, which will happen here in a microcosm, which means just to one person as opposed to the entire people. And the other thing, what you know about Sinai, is that when the revelation takes place, it's going to be accompanied by a sound and light show, and, you know, thunder and lightning and so on. So one wonders the fire which is seen over here, to what extent it is related. But the other thing which is interesting is the vision itself of something which I would say is a representation of infinity. How in the world you can define or represent infinity? Well, something which is not being consumed at all, something which is unchanging. Vayarashem kisar lerot vayikra elav Elokim mitoch hasnen. One of the things that we note over here is the back and forth and the switching between the different names of God. And what we have over here, it says a Malach Hashem. He said Har Elohim and a Malach Hashem. And most likely the Malach Hashem over here is the burning bush. And God calls out to him from the midst of the bush, Vayomer Moshe Moshe, Vayomer Hineni, Vayomer Al Tikrav Halom, Shal Na Lecha Me'al Raglecha. Take off your shoes from your feet. Because this is a holy place. And that may answer one of our earlier questions. Does Moshe know where he's going? Is he going there because he saw this incredible vision, namely the burning bush, and that's what brings him there? Or is it he's going that something is pulling there? Which, of course, gives us a different possibilities. Do Jews go to places because they know that they're holy? They sense that they're holy? Is it always something which is on purpose? I mean, it always strikes me, and sadly this is less over the years, but the extent that secular or quote-unquote secular Israelis go to shul on Yom Kippur, I mean, that's what's interesting, is that if one lives not in a religious area like I do, which is a mixed area, and you see every year in Yom Kippur, secular people, or if you want to call them Misorati, I'm fine with that as well, but a lot of them will dress in white, come to the shul, but not walk inside the shul. And it seems to me as if there's something which is pulling them. They know that this, but they can't bring themselves to walk inside because that's where religious people go. So they come to shul and they stand outside of shul. And it is something which I think is fascinating. Something pulls Moshe over to this place, and now he's told this is a holy place. And that itself is also interesting, because later on, Sinai is not going to retain its holiness. Sinai is not a place which is inherently holy. Sinai is not Eretz Yisrael, let's put it that way, other than a funny passage in the Sefer Kuzari. It's not Eretz Yisrael. It has momentary holiness. It is holy as long as a revelation takes place. And the evidence for that is by Matan Torah. It's going to be holy as we prepare. And then the second the shofar blows, it loses its holiness. And then, the animals could graze on it. Anybody can go on it. So it's interesting over here. It's called Admat Kodesh. And I would then argue that it's Admat Kodesh. It's a holy land now, because right now a revelation is taking place. So again, this is this microcosm of Matan Torah. And one of the things that I want you to remember this is that everything taking place here is in fact a microcosm of Matan Torah, because that's going to make a big difference, especially in terms of one of the major issues that I want to try to address. V'yomar Anochi, now once I said it's a microcosm of Matan Torah, the word Anochi suddenly became a lot more interesting than it was beforehand, because otherwise, it's just turn of language or turn of phrase. But now, V'yomar Anochi, Elokei Avicha, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, V'yester Moshe Panav, Kirim Ebit Elokim. So over here you have Moshe, who is initially unaware it's a holy place, and therefore he's with his shoes on, and then there's this voice speaking to him, and then he realizes that it's God, and Moshe... And probably the overriding issue over here is Moshe's humility. And Moshe thinks that he's afraid. He has Yirat Elohim. So far in Sefer Shemot, the people with Yirat Elohim were the midwives. They're the ones who had Yirat Elohim, and they were not willing to listen to Paro. So now we learn that there's somebody else who has Yirat Elohim, and that's Moshe. So that is also interesting, because we did not know anything about Moshe's religious sensibility. What we knew about Moshe till now, if we really think about it, is that Moshe cared a great deal about Am Yisrael, and he wanted to protect the Jewish people. So I could have said that Moshe was all prepared to be the Ramatkal in a secular Israeli army. I know that some of you don't like when I just now said that. But I'm saying, but we knew nothing about his religious orientation. We know that he's growing up in the palace, but he has a sense that he's a Jew. So therefore, is it a religious sense, or is it more of a cultural or a national sense? But now we realize, and that's why partially why this is important, especially when we had a question which was raised, and that question had to do with what exactly is the deal with Moshe living comfortably with the Kohen Midian. So now we learn that Moshe truly has Yirat Hashem. So that's why this is going a great deal to explain to us, who Moshe is. V'yom Hashem ra'o ra'iti, and I'm going to make this whole part easy. And it's also interesting where exactly the division is, which of course is not the division between the first chapter and the second chapter, because it's actually an awkward division, because this is the middle of one story. So why break up the one story into two different pieces? It should have been one. Okay, there are chapters which are longer than 22 verses. It should have kept on going. But what's going to happen in the rest of this chapter, the rest of Perek Gimel, is God is going to say what he is going to do. I mean, that's how it starts. And at some point over here, though, in the middle, he's going to let Moshe know, oh yeah, by the way, you're going to do this for me. You mean you're going to be a shliach. And by the way, Moshe could have opened up the Haggadah from Pesach on God and said to him, excuse me, it says regarding Yitzhak Mitzrayim, lo yade shaliach, v'lo yade malach. You're supposed to do this. Why are you bothering me to do this? This is your responsibility to do. But let's read what God says and then what Moshe responds and then where exactly the break is. So God tells him as follows. Re'o re'iti posek zayin et Uniya Ami Ashiba Mitzrayim. Okay, my people, I see the difficulties they're going to. Vetzakatam Shamati, and I've heard their cries and so on, and I know about their pain. Ve'ared, so here God says, I'm gonna do it. So that's great. So Moshe's standing on the clapping. This is wonderful, go for it. Ve'ared Latzilo Miyad Mitzrayim, Latom and Aretz Ahi El Aretz Torva, Urchavel Aretz Bar. And so on. So this is great. Essentially, God is telling Moshe, okay, by the way, I'm going to fulfill my word now, the Brit Bein Tarim. I'm going to keep what I said I'm going to do. And then he continues. And he says, again, I've heard their cries. And again, I've seen the pain that they're in. But then Pasuk Yud gets is the surprise. Vata lecha veshlachacha el paro. And again, you will be my shliach. Which again, I'm not going to overstate this question. Why do we say by the Seder, lo yedei shliach? The pshat of that pasuk is only regarding to makat b'chorot and is not talking about everything in the process, but here Moshe is appointed or anointed as a shliach. Go to Paro, votzei atami b'nei Yisrael mimitzrayim. And that shift in pasuk Yud really takes Moshe by surprise. And we will recall along the way that Moshe is quite modest. So on top of everything else, you know, I'm going to be the shliach for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Like, what in the world are you talking about? Vayomer Moshe el Elokim, mi anochi keilecho Paro, v'chi otzi et b'nei Yisrael mimitzrayim? Like, what are you talking about? That I'm going to go, who am I to go? And I'm going to be able to do this? And then God responds, and we're going to constantly have this response. V'yakia ye'imach, I will be with you. V'zelecha ha'ot. Now, the word ot, we'll give that a bold also. The word ot, it means a sign. It can also mean a letter, but over here it means a sign. V'zelecha ha'ot. And this will be the sign that I have sent you. You're my shaliach. That when you take them out, they will serve God on this mountain. Thereby already telling Moshe that what you're experiencing now in terms of this revelation and being charged with a mission, and I'll go a little further, of being a shaliach, an emissary of God in this world, what we're going to end up finding out is that all of Am Yisrael are going to end up having a revelation on Mount Sinai when they serve God in this place, and they're going to be charged with a mission of being God's shliach, amalechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, which means one of the things in the whole story of leaving Egypt, we get a little surprise when we end up by Har Sinai. You know, that wasn't in the brochure. Where did these commandments come from? Well, the answer came right over here. And as I'll say it again, it could be that Moshe doesn't understand it. It could be that Am Yisrael don't understand it. But it's enough that we understand it. We understand exactly what God is saying. That when you take, am I going to take them out? Sure, I will. And this is going to be the oat. Now the question is, why is that an oat? Why is this called a sign? Shouldn't be a sign. That should be a mission. And that's really important. This is one of the things that I want to pay attention to today. Why is this called a sign? V'zelecha ha'ot. I mean, this is one of these things that play tricks on people's minds. I've done this plenty of times in classes, and I've asked people, when God gave Moshe a sign by the burning bush, what was the first sign, what was the second sign? And inevitably, people talk about the staff, and people talk about the hand, and they talk about the blood, and nobody remembers that the word oat is being used over here as well, and therefore, that's exactly what I want to remember. Why in the world is the word oat being used over here, and what is taking place? So I'll say it again, working backwards, because we have the benefit of being able to work backwards, that what Moshe is experiencing over here is what the people will experience, and Moshe is going to have a revelation, and they're going to have a revelation. Moshe sees something which is unbelievable. They're going to see something which is unbelievable. Moshe has a sense of the divine, of infinity. They're going to have a sense of the divine of infinity. Moshe is charged with the mission, and they're going to be charged with the mission. And all of that is packed up in these couple of verses over here, even though, I'll say it again, it's quite possible that people looking at this don't necessarily see this, but that's really what's here. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayom Moshe l'kim, hinei nochi bo b'nei Yisrael, v'amarti lahem, elokei avoteichem shalachani aleichem. And now Moshe is saying, okay, a hypothetical really. Let's just go and I say that I am your shaliach, from really mashmo. Now we don't know yet, why is this even important? What the name is, ma omar lahem. What exactly should I say? I'm saying that I am an emissary of whom? Vayom l'kim Moshe, yeah, and by the way, some people don't even say that word. They'll say ke. It's a question. I mean, this is how kadosh is that word? Let's put it that way. Yeah, asher yeah. But yom kol to my love in Israel, yeshalachani aleichem. Essentially, saying God could be understood on His terms. But yomer oder lokim Moshe kol to my love in Israel, Hashem elokei avoteichem, elokei Avraham, elokei Yitzchak, elokei Yaakov, shalachani aleichem ze shmi leolam veze zechri ledor dor. And now the mission gets a little bit more specific. Lech l'safta tzek nei Yisrael. V'mar t'lehem. Hashem elokei avoteichem nira elai. Go tell them that God appeared to me. Elokei Avraham, elokei Yitzchak, elokei Yaakov. The next two words, pakod pakadati, according to Chazal, are really quite important, and we're going to try to come back to that. And tell them, pakod pakadati etchem, God remembers you, ve'et asui lechem mitzrayim, what was done to you, v'omar ale etchem me'oni mitzrayim el eretz akani v'achiti v'amuri, and essentially tell them that I am fulfilling my mission, again, fulfilling the Brit Ben Abiturim. And then he tells something which Moshe should not argue with. V'sham'u lekolecha, they will listen to you. And you and the elders go together to Mitzrayim. By the way, that they don't listen to. The Zakenim sort of disappear. And by him you don't say the name as much. I know it's Hashem, but it's really not the same. You're not going to give him the same information. But really it's the God of the Hebrews. And we're going to travel for 3 days. And serve God. And then God says something which should drive Moshe crazy. So it's interesting. Moshe says, but, you know, are they going to listen to me? And God says, yeah, they're going to listen to you. But your basic mission is to take them out, and Paro's not going to listen to you. But lo biyad chazaka, v'shalachti et yadi. And over here, it's interesting because, again, you have that shlichut, but you don't know exactly how it's going to be done. V'shalachti et yadi, outstretch my proverbial arm, or if you want, you can use a different word. V'keti et Mitzrayim b'kod neflotai, and I'm going to strike Egypt, anthropomorphic, you could use, and strike Egypt with all of my wonders. V'acharechen yishlach etchem, and then it's going to work. And this is also very important because this is telling us that God is telling, this is God communicating to Moshe that I have the ability of controlling people's thoughts and actions, which means I will make sure that they find that they like you. And this fulfills also the Brit Bein Abtarim that you're going to leave Birchush Gadol, then over here you're going to ask to borrow, and so on. So this chapter ends with God charging Moshe, giving him a mission. We get a sense then of the micro and the macrocosm which is taking place over here. The Jews are going to leave, but it's going to be a process. Moshe has no idea at this point how long the process is. All that he's told is it's not going to happen so quickly, and you have a sign, and the sign is going to be that the entire people will serve me on this mountain. And that takes us to chapter 2. Chapter 2 is when Moshe says something which is far more problematic. Because till now he asked, who am I to be your shliach? And when people are going to start asking me questions, and what should I say then? Because, you know, people will say, I just want to go back for a second. First it's technical, who should I say is sending me? And then over here Moshe says something which goes much further. And this is going to be important as well. Va'ya'an Moshe v'yoma v'hein lo ya'aminu li. V'lo yishmu b'koli. They will not believe me. Now, if before Moshe saying, who am I to be a shliach, that's one thing. Over here, however, he's saying something very different. Over here, he's saying that Am Yisrael will not believe me. And I want you all to notice why that is difficult. One, and this is the obvious point, is that he's saying Lashon Hara against Am Yisrael, and that's something which is severe. You can't say Lashon Hara against Am Yisrael. The Rambam actually has, you know, one of the issues is, in terms of belief, is that one has to believe that Am Yisrael eventually will do tshuva, which means what Moshe is saying over, but they're not going to believe in me. Well, they will believe sooner or later. All of Am Yisrael will believe sooner or later. All of Am Yisrael will turn to God. And the Rambam has this as, I'm not going to say quite an article of faith, but pretty much, because if believing a Mashiach is an article of faith, that is the way he describes it as taking place. Ein Yisrael Negalin Ela B'Tshuva. And he says all the prophets prophesized about this. That means it's going to happen. Which means belief in Am Yisrael is something which is quite important. And I'm not here to question Moshe's greatness. I'm saying over here there's a problem, especially note the word emunah v'lo ya'aminu li, they will not believe me, and they're not going to listen to me. The second reason why this is problematic is don't get fooled by the break between the chapters from last chapter to this chapter, because in last chapter, what were we told? That God is essentially saying, and I can micromanage people and get them to believe what they want. Paro's not going to listen to you. We don't know yet about the hardening of the heart, but he says, but you're going to, I will put the favor, v'nantati etchein ha'am hazeh b'nei Mitzrayim. That the Mitzrayim will find the Jewish people very, very attractive in the sense that they want to do something to make them happy. So then how can Moshe say, after God said that I have the ability of controlling people's thoughts, how can Moshe then say when he's chosen to be the one who's going to facilitate taking them out and say, but they're not going to listen to me? And that's the second level why this is problematic. V'yomei lav Hashem mazeh b'yadecha. And God says, what's that in your hand? V'yom mateh. And he says, it is a mateh. It is, and mateh in unculus, Aramaic, is chutra. Right? When you get to the Chad Gadya and you want to know where the chutra came from, so this is where the chutra comes from. This is the mateh. V'yom ashlicheu artzav, ashlicheu artzav yihi l'nachash. And it becomes a nachash. Now, before we go any further, there's something, you know, very important and very interesting which just now took place. Moshe misspoke. Moshe said something against Am Yisrael. Moshe spoke, if you would choose, Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra. And at that point, what happens is that this staff, and what is a staff? A staff is something which is there for support. It is something which helps you. It helps you walk. It helps him as a shepherd. It then turns into an adversary. V'yihi l'nachash. The nachash is the oldest and first adversary that we ever had. And when his mateh, something which he can lean on, now becomes an adversary, that is frightening. For us, we understand, again, hopefully, that the nachash was the first one to misuse his speech. Here Moshe has misused his speech. The nachash was there in order to cause Eve and Adam not to have proper belief in God. And over here, Moshe is saying that they won't believe in you. So the appearance of the Nachash is probably quite important. V'yinas Moshe mipanav, and Moshe was afraid of this, which is also interesting, because one would think that a seasoned shepherd should know how to deal with the Nachash, unless we're dealing with something which is not just a physical Nachash, but something that Moshe senses as something which represents sin, and something which represents something which is quite problematic. And then God says something which is interesting, and again, we'll need to understand this. V'yomer Hashem Moshe, shlach yadcha, v'achoz biznavo, put your hand out and grab onto its tail, right, the bottom of the snake, v'yishlach yado, v'yachazek po, v'yil mateh b'kapo, and it turned back into a mateh. So what did we just now learn? I mean, there is a message to this. This isn't just a trick. And maybe those of us who were brought up on, depending how old you are, either the Ten Commandments or the Prince of Egypt or whatever else it may be, so then we like the tricks and we remember the tricks as tricks, but let's not ignore the theological issue which is being represented over here by this. The first thing is that the staff has the ability of, again, something for support turning into an adversary, but then something which is an adversary has the ability of turning back into something which is there for support. And I believe that the transformation which Moshe is seeing over here between something which is like a nachash to become something which is a mateh, and realize the nachash going back to, again, the most basic thing. We're allowed to talk about the Garden of Eden, right? Especially when I don't know how many books I wrote with the word Eden in the title, that everything goes back to Eden, especially this goes back to Eden. You go back to Eden, then you have a serpent, and the serpent is the adversary. And the serpent is the nachash, and it's the satan, and it's the malach hamavet, and any other negative thing that you can think of. And what's interesting over here is that this nachash could somehow magically turn into something which is supportive, and something which will actually strike down Egypt, which itself is an evil society. And I want you to begin to think about this, which means Egyptian society is going to be destroyed because of a nachash turned into a mateh. Or you're going to tell me, no, it's a mateh turned into a nachash, turned back into a mateh. And that doesn't concern me as much right now. But it is this ability of transformation. That's really the issue over here. It's the transformative quality that we need to pay attention to. And why? Because that is exactly the context over here. Because Moshe just now said, but Am Yisrael won't believe me. Why won't they believe you? How do you know what they don't believe you? So Moshe actually has a pretty good argument that he can make. And his argument could be, well, I tried once before, and they didn't believe me. They didn't listen to me. They didn't have any interest and have anything to do with me. I told, you know, I was trying to do something, and essentially the response that Moshe receives was, who are you? You know, who do you think you are? You know, who put you in charge over here? So if he goes back now, Moshe, I mean, that's part of the problem. Moshe was already conditioned. You know, sometimes we become the people that our enemies tell us that we are. We allow them to get into our heads or to get into our hearts and to tell us that we can't do certain things and that we're limited and then that we don't have abilities. And over here, Moshe was told, who are you? Who put you in charge? And I can imagine that's still ringing in his ears all these years later when he goes back now and he has to say, well, who put you in charge? Well, God put me in charge. Yeah, do you have it in writing? Like, what do you mean God put you in charge? Which means once you're shot down, it makes it more difficult to stand up. And Moshe over here, and my point is, let's understand Moshe. Let's not judge Moshe. Let's understand that there's a history over here to this. And the history is one which should cause him to pause when God charges him with the responsibility of taking Am Yisrael out. So now, if we stop there for a moment, and now, again, think, Moshe says these people, essentially, Moshe doesn't believe what God has already told him. You know, you think about this idea, lo ya'aminu bi. So now, who is not believing? Okay, I'm going to say this again. This is very important. I'm actually accusing Moshe of not believing something. You'll see why I'm saying this as we move on. But what am I accusing him of not believing? He doesn't necessarily believe that these people, he doesn't believe in the first oat. Which means my point is the first oath and the second oath are related to one another in a way that maybe we didn't think about. The first oath was that they're going to come out and they're going to serve God on this mountain. They're going to come to Mount Sinai and they're going to stand by Har Sinai and they're going to undergo the same thing that you undergone. They're going to have a revelation. They're going to see a burning bush or something even which is far more impressive than a burning bush, and that's Har Sinai. Har Bo'esh Ad Lev HaShamayim. They're going to see something which is unbelievable, and just like you have a revelation, they're going to have a revelation. But in order for all that to happen, well, maybe there's one more point. Just as you're standing on holy ground, they're going to stand on holy ground, which means that there is going to be a people who are going to be transformed, and I'll add on because I know what happens afterwards, and they're going to become a Mamlechet Kohanim and Goy Kadosh, which means the issue over here is an issue of transformation and believing in transformation. And maybe this is something which it sounds very harsh that I'm accusing Moshe of lack of belief. As I said, we'll see that it's God that does this. It's not me. I'm just reading between the lines right now. But this is something which all of us are guilty of sometimes. That all of us are guilty of not necessarily believing in transformative experiences. We don't believe that we can change. We don't believe other people can change. We don't believe that a nation can change. Because it is just so easy to judge the present based upon the past rather than looking and seeing and discerning potential and understanding that especially with help of God, all kinds of things which seem absolutely impossible become possible. And one of the great problems that we have today is realism and rationalism. I don't mean this completely, it's a problem, but it is. Because when we're realistic and when we are rationalistic, then we don't see the impossible as becoming possible. And if anything, living in the land of Israel is something which is full of impossibilities, including the little banter that some of us had before we started, and the percentage of this country that already has received their inoculations. So I'm saying that there are miraculous things that take place every single day to live in Israel is to believe in that the miraculous is possible. And by the way, I became much more convinced of this after I served, or while I was serving the Israeli army, and seeing essentially kids who are making decisions and they're so out of their league, and somebody is guiding what is taking place over here, that somehow this is successful. The miraculous is really the everyday, and you can't look too, you know, carefully on it, because then you don't really, because then you'll realize that miracles are taking place, and there are. And what Moshe is looking at is a people in a much more realistic way, and God is saying to him, but there's a transformative experience. And the transformative experience is based upon that interaction between the divine, who is infinite, and man, who is finite, which is essentially what the whole goal, the whole experience which takes place at the burning bush. Finite man Moshe meets infinite God and a burning bush, and he's looking and seeing this impossibility, but the impossible is possible, because in our world something is burning, it gets consumed, but when you're an infinite God, something which is burning does not have to get consumed. And therefore, once you realize that there is this element of infinity as part of the equation, so then realize the entire equation becomes different. It is not the same math. It doesn't, it meaning that that fudge factor of infinity thrown into the equation completely will change any kind of anticipated response. And now we'll go back again, which means God says to Moshe, these people, you will take them out and they will serve God on this mountain, which means the transformation will take place. And Moshe's response is, but, you know, based upon my experience and based upon a rational approach, that can't happen. That's not possible that that can happen. And then God says, okay, let's choose the most evil thing which ever existed in the history of the world, right? At the dawn of history, the thing which brought death into the world, which is the serpent. Take that serpent, take your staff, put it down, throw it down, it turns into the serpent. And now go, watch the serpent transform into something which is back into your hands and you can control it. That's also important. There's also this play of put your hand on the tail and this flipping which takes place where the back becomes the front and the front becomes the back, which is also even more so. There is a Gemara where Bishub ben Levi speaks to his son who has a near-death experience, and he says, what did you see? And he says that Olam Hafuch Matzati. I saw a world which was the opposite of what I anticipated. People who are honored here are not honored there, and people who are not honored here aren't honored there. And I think it's a line in a Dylan song as well, that you find out when you reach the top, you're on the bottom. So if anyone needs to identify where that lyric is from, I'm not going to give you the answer. Anyway, let us continue then. That my point is that I asked before, why is that an oat? Of course that was an oat. Of course that is a sign. This is the sign about the transformation. And now let's try to continue and see how far we can get. I can absolutely assure you that we're not going to get where I wanted to today, but let us continue nonetheless. Pasuk Hey, Lemanya Aminu Kinirai Lecha Shano, because they will believe you, which means belief is in your hands, which is also a fascinating thing that he's saying. Again, Vayomer Hashem Lo Od, right? Put your hand and put it inside, and he does. Vini Yadot Mitzarat Kashalig, and it becomes like Tzarat. Tzarat also is connected to the. It's also connected to the serpent. It's also connected later on to Miriam. But Sarat Motzi Shem is connected to Motzi Shemra, to speaking inappropriately. The person has Sarat, in a sense, they lose their skin. A snake loses its skin, but it's also scaly skin, also serpent-like. And I'll leave it at that, but I don't see these things as independent. I see these things as being connected. The other thing, which is probably very important in this, is the Gemara will identify that Sarat, leprosy, is one of the things which is like death, which means put your hand in and then death. And that's also connected to the serpent that brings death into the world. So therefore, put your hand in and there it's partial death. Later on, when Miriam gets it, then that is said about her. It is as if she's dead. So that's where the Gemara understands it from. But now we're also seeing this issue of transformative experiences, being able to go from life to death and then back from death to life again. and in order for that hand becoming healed. So again, I want to point out that what's taking place over here is an issue of transformation. And again, to completely frustrate Moshe in Pasuk Chet, Vim lo yaminu lach v'lo yishma'u l'kol ha'ota rishon, v'aminu l'kol ha'ota acharon. If they don't listen to the first, listen to the second one, which is great until you read the next Pasuk, Pasuk Tet. V'yoyim lo yaminu gam l'shnei otota eile v'lo yishma'u l'kol lecha v'lekach t'mecha or, and don't believe to those first two, then let's take the life force of Egypt, which is going to be the Nile, and turn it into blood, which is, again, life being transformed into death, and being able to show what is coming for the Egyptians. But my point over here is that everything over here is transformative. Pasuk Yud Vayoma Moshe El Hashem Bi Adoni Lo Ish Dvarim Enochi. And now finally, Moshe moves to a technicality. I'm not a man of words. Gam Mitzmol, Gam Mishalshom, Gam Miaz Dabercha El Avdecha Ki Kaved Kvad Peh Ukvad Lashon Enochi. I have this inability to speak. And God responds, "Misam pelo dam, umiyasum ilay mocharesh or pikeach." I'm God, you know. I know a bit about creation. I know a bit about fixing things. I know a bit about who gives speech to man. Vatalech, vanocheya, impicha. Right? I will be your peh. I will be your mouth. I do want to note that over here, the word peh, the word picha, is going to be important as well. Vareticha asher tedaber, and I will instruct you how to pray. Vayomer bi Adoni, and he finally says, please God, shalachna biyad tishalach, send who you send. And then we have, and this is going to be a major issue, v'yichar af Hashem b'Moshe, and God gets incredibly angry at Moshe. And he says, your brother Aaron is coming, right? Yadati ki daber yidaberhu, he will speak for you. Now, let's pause at Pasuk Tet Zayin. V'diber hu l'cha el ha'am. He will speak to the people. V'yohu ye l'cha l'peh. He will be your mouth. A moment before God said that I will be your mouth. No, he will be your mouth. Ve'et tamateh hazet ikach biyadecha. Asher taseh bo et ha'otot. And you'll take this staff with you. So, question number one. Why is God so angry now? From the top of your heads, tell me how many times we're told till this point in the Torah that God got angry. For that matter, off the top of your heads, tell me how many times in the rest of the Torah will tell us that God got angry. He does get angry. Although as far as I know, he made it through all of Sefer Bereshit without expressing anger. By the way, I think that is something which is very, very good. Any of us who are parents and one of the things that maybe we've told ourselves, we're not going to get angry, we're not going to express anger, and then we end up expressing anger and getting angry and so on. And it's not simple. God goes through all the Sefer Bereshit, and there's no anger on God's part. And there was reason for anger. There are a lot of people who deserved it, and it didn't happen. For Moshe to be the first person that God gets angry with is interesting and important, and maybe anger takes place when you have expectations. But I'll also want to go back to this transformative issue, and the anger is here, and Moshe, who's not accepting the transformation. My other question that I have is, what are the implications of this anger? What's changed? And I want to say something which maybe to some of you is not going to be obvious, but is very obvious to me. The elements over here of he will speak for you. Moshe says, I can't speak. God says, take your staff. All of these elements are later going to be found in an episode which will end up leading to Moshe's demise. And that is when Moshe takes his staff and speaks to the rock, which is interesting, somebody who says he can't speak, and instead of speaking to the people as he's supposed to, and then he hits the rock, and then God says, actually very interesting, because you lo hamantem bi, because you did not believe in me. So that's going to be interesting, because over here Moshe accuses the people of not having emunah, and instead we find that Moshe somehow does not have emunah. We find the elements of the speech, and we find the elements of the staff, of the mateh, all of them are over here, and then of course I have to ask myself this question, okay, so you know, what is it that took place over here? Meaning what really is the issue? And as much as we are sometimes convinced that the reason that Moshe can't go into Eretz Yisrael is because of what happened when he hit the rock, my question is whatever happened to the rock, did it already have its origin right over here as well? Which means Moshe was supposed to speak to the rock, and he actually, you know, I misstated it before, Moshe was supposed to speak to the rock, and it's then he speaks to the people. Over here, Moshe has told us he can speak to the people, right? Who am I to speak to the people? He's supposed to speak to the rock, and he ends up hitting the rock. So something wrong happened, and what I'm asking is, whatever wrong happened there, does it have somehow a connection over here? So let's continue. And we'll skip for now the rest of this chapter, even though when I ask what are the implications, by Pasuk Kaf Dalet we find that God tried to kill Moshe already. And why is it that he tries to kill Moshe? I mean, what's that all about? Where did that come from? And is that significant? The other thing is, does Moshe listen to God? He says he's listening, but why does God have to tell him again to go? God has to tell him again, the people who want to kill you are not here anymore. Things have changed. Okay. One of the haftorahs, there are differences between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim in different weeks and different customs, but one of the haftorahs which are read around this parsha, sometimes Shemot, some Be'erit, again, different customs, is Yirmiyahu, Perek Aleph, which probably does have some significance, because here he was told that he's chosen from the womb, which Moshe was as well, and he says, I really can't speak, and God says that v'yiga'al pi, and God touches his mouth, and God says, I will give you the ability to speak. And he also says something else over here. Yirmiyahu is a prophet of doom, and he says that you're going to go and prophesy. This is already in Pasuk Yud. Lintosh ulintotz ulahavid ulaharos ulavnot lintoa, all transformative issues. To destroy and to build, to uproot and to plant. These are things which you're going to have to prophesy about, but I'm going to say it again. It's all about change. In source number 4, here we have God being angry. Where is he angry? He's angry when the Jews, by Mount Sinai, transform belief in God and the experience of Mount Sinai into the worship of the golden calf. And that should have been completely predictable. We find in source number 5, God getting upset when the people are mit'onanim, when the people are complaining. That morphs into the ta'ava, which comes right afterwards, where the people again wish that they were back in Egypt. And we find afterwards, Vayichar af Hashem ma'od uvinei Moshe ra. And the, over here also, boche lemishpachotav, the petach olo, which the rabbis understand having certain sexual undertones to it. And we'll see if we can get there. I have a serious doubt that we will. In source number 6, goes back, and maybe this is not coincidental, where also Lashon Hara is being spoken, but this is Lashon Hara of Miriam and Aaron against Moshe, and the word Ne'eman we have to worry about, or wonder about, and how connected that may be to Emunah, Lokein Avdi Moshe, Peh Al Peh Adaber, and that's also interesting, because the Peh is back over here as well. Vayichar af Hashem bam, and God was upset with them. So over here, so far we have a rejection of God and our rejection of Moshe, and leading to anger. In source number 7, which also shouldn't surprise us, another rejection of God where they worship idolatry, again, Baal Pa'or, Vayichar af Hashem. So I'm saying these other usages of anger shouldn't surprise us, and we'll throw one more in source number 8, when it says that Moshe tells us by B'nai Reuven, God and Reuven, when they ask to stay outside, and Moshe accuses them of being like the Meraglim, and he says, V'ichar af Hashem b'yomahu, and God was angry on that day. So therefore, again, this should have been predictable. Golden calf, Meraglim, Baal Peor. Those are the places we would expect God to be angry. That makes perfect sense. And again, if you want to round it off in source number 9, where it describes the day that the Jewish people will be rejecting God and worshiping other gods. And this is talking about the future curses upon the people. And again, when they worship other gods. So all this is predictable. But why this great anger over here towards Moshe in this particular context? So, when Moshe, and I alluded to this earlier in source 11, when Moshe is going to commit the act which we think causes him not to be going to Israel, this is where he's told to take the mateh, dibartim el hasela. Instead, Moshe takes the mateh and he speaks to the people. Instead of speaking to the, he hits it. And what exactly is the hitting it? Not only hit it, he hits it twice. And Pasuk Yud Bet says, "No, vayomer Shem Moshe vel Aaron, yan lo himantim bi laktisheni. You did not believe in me in order to sanctify, and therefore you cannot bring the people in. Lechen lo tovi et hakal hazeh el aretz asher natati lechem." Okay, so let me point out one more thing here, which may be significant. This happened, source 11 is Perek Kaf in Bamidbar, Parshat Chukat. Immediately afterwards, in Perek Kaf Aleph in Chukat, V'yisumei har har derech yam suf, l'svov et eretz Edom, they end up taking a long way around, and it's at that point the people start complaining, and then the Nechashim come. So it's interesting that the Nechash shows up over there. I mean, right after the Mateh was perhaps misused, suddenly the Nechash is there, and Vayomer Hashem in Pasuk Chet, El Moshe Aseh Lecha Sraf, V'sim Al Hanes, which I also note, and whoever lives this will sees this will live. V'yas Moshe Nachash Nachoshet V'simu Al Hanes, V'yayim Nashach Nachash Et Ha'ish V'ybeta Nachash Nachoshet V'chai, that we have some kind of healing for the Nachash, the medical unit in Israel. In the army, they still have this Nachash serpent on them because of this, because the serpent brings healing. Now look at the Gemara, or it's actually a Mishnah in Source 15. The Mishnah says, Vayakashe Yarim Moshe Yado, so we're going to come back to that in a second, that during the war against Amalek, when Moshe lifted up his hands, then the Jews would be victorious. V'chi Yadav Moshe Osot Milchama, do Moshe's hands make victory? So the Gemara says, no, Kol Zman Sheyisrael Mistaklim Klapei Mala, when they have emunah, Umishabdim Et Libam Laviyem Shabishmaim Hayumit Gabrim, which means victory took place when we have emunah. Now notice this little phrase, which will lead to the second part of the Mishnah. Ki Yotze B'davar Ata Omer, and it's the same thing regarding another episode. Asei Lechasraf Esimoto Al Nes V'yaki Enach Nashuch v'ra'oto v'chai, v'yakol ha'nashuch v'ra'oto v'chai, v'chi nachash meimit o nachash mechaye, ele b'zman she'yisrael mistaklim klapim ma'al m'shabdim et libam levi b'mishamayim ha'yu mitrapim. And one of the things we need to wonder is what was this comparison between these two episodes, but also notice something else which has just now taken place. The Nachash, which we were so afraid of, which Moshe is afraid of, has become transformed. And now the Nachash is something which on the one hand was attacking people and a moment later is bringing upon life. So therefore, the same transformation which took place over here by the Sneh in terms of a staff, a mateh, which becomes a Nachash and becomes a staff again, and something which will be then used to strike the Egyptians and to bring about salvation, it's actually appearing in a later episode in a negative way and then in a positive way. It's this Nachash turning around, and we were just now told another amazing thing in the Mishnah. Oh, you want to understand that? That is actually comparable to another episode, and that was this episode of the Milchama against Amalek, and let's take a careful look at that as well, and then I'm going to try to wrap things up as best I can, even though I skipped most of what I wanted to do. In source 16, we have a Yitzak Moshe El Hashem Lemor Mas. So, of course, right before Milchamet Amalek is the same scene again with the people wanting water, and he says, they're going to stone me, and God says, take your mateh and go over, and at this point he says, and hit the rock, the tzur, hit the rock, and that's going to bring about water. Immediately afterwards, Amalek comes. So, Pasuk Tet, Vayom Moshe El Yoshua B'char Lenu Hashem V'tzei Lachem B'malek, That the war will take place and Moshe will have the mateh in his hands. So Yeshua goes down to fight. Moshe goes up to the top of the mountain. And of course, now we have to ask, what is in his hand? And the answer is the mateh, because that was what it said in Pasuk Tet. When Moshe lifts up his hands with the mateh, then Am Yisrael is victorious. And when Moshe takes down his hands, then Amalek is victorious. And it continues, and it says, V'dei Moshe k'fedim, right? And then they hold him up. V'yihi yadav emunah. And notice the emunah is here as well. Ad bo ha-shemesh. Yehuda, Yehoshua is victorious, and God says, and this is important, Pasuk Yudalid, V'yomer Shem Moshe k'tov zot zikaron b'sefer v'sim ba'oznei Yehoshua. And tell Yehoshua, and then Hashem nisi al nes, that's also going to be important. And now I'm going to try to explain everything that we've seen today, and we'll see how much, again, we could cover. The power of the Nachash is the power of speech. Moshe's weakness is his ability to speak. Chazal tell us it may not be something that Moshe was born with, but it's possible that that was something that happened. That's the Midrash, that Moshe, in that test in the Midrash, he goes for the crown instead of the fire, and the Malach pushes his hand to the fire and he touches his mouth, and at that point he suffers an injury, and that injury causes a disability in Moshe, and Moshe now cannot speak, or cannot speak properly. Some of the commentaries say that the letter that Moshe couldn't say was the Peh, because he hurt his lips when Kaved Peh, the Kaved Lashon. It was the Peh which he couldn't say. And therefore, when Moshe actually does speak and tells, and God tells him, say, Nohu Pakod Pakadati, that's exactly what Moshe could not say naturally. That was exactly what Moshe was only able to do when God gave him that ability again. But again, this contrast now between the Nachash, who uses speech, but uses speech to kill, versus Moshe, who says that I can speak, which means that the Nachash has the one thing which Moshe doesn't have. That's going to be important. The other thing which is going to be important is going to be pointed out by a number of different commentaries. And the most important commentary on everything I'm saying today is actually going to be the Zohar, because the Zohar speaks about the mateh of Moshe, of being a dual mateh, that on the one hand was a nachash, I don't want to use the word tattooed, because we used that earlier when we spoke about Esav, but it says, no, that was on one side of the nachash. One side of the mateh was a nachash, and on the other side of it was the name of God was written into it. And therefore, and there's a lot in terms of Kabbalistic sources, in terms of the magical mateh and what were the qualities of this mateh, but the mateh is something which has within it, shall we say, the ability of taking the nachash and turning it into something which is positive. If that's not completely clear, because I would suspect it's not, so I'll tell you a gematria, which some of you will then conclude that you can do anything with gematria, but this is mentioned by early sources, especially the Kabbalistic ones as well. It actually had terrible implications later on with Shabtai Tzvi, and that was the realization that the word nachash has the same numerical value as Mashiach. And it's a very easy gematria, because mem plus yud equals nun. Nachash and Mashiach have the same value. So now the question is, what do you do with that? Which means Shabtai Tzvi would say, well, the one who is Mashiach has to do all the actions of the Nachash. And I'm going to continue and to say that there is within the Nachash this element of a phallic symbol, which is also there within the Mateh. It's also interesting, by the Malon, the reason that Moshe is attacked is for the lack of doing Brit Milah, which, and the only question is with whom, is it the first child, the second child, is it him? What exactly is the problem over here? But there may actually be this whole subtext that we never noticed, which does exist over there. But let's ignore Shabtai Tzvi, or maybe his prophet from Aza. I don't know what good came out of Aza. One of the Zmiron Shabbat, Dror Yekrai, I think, came out of Aza. And the idea that the Nachash can be transformed and turned into something which is positive and be a Goel is what it means when it says that Mashiach and the Nachash could be one. And that was essentially the message which God is teaching. I just now saved you pages of Zohar by saying this in 90 seconds. It's that all things in this world can be used to serve God, but they need to be used to serve God. And that was the reason why most of this of the anger that was used by God in most places were places where instead of God was being served, it was transformed, that power and passion to serve God was instead used for avodah zarah, and that was the problem. And when Moshe is not willing to recognize the transformative ability or capability that people have to be able to become something new, that's where the anger comes to Moshe as well. Which means essentially what God is teaching Moshe by the Sneh is that these people that look like they, the language of the Kabbalist, have sunk to the 49th level of Tuma and can possibly walk out of there and end up standing by Har Sinai and being able to serve God on this mountain, impossible things happen. Listen, again, it was perhaps for some of us a long time ago, for some of us not that long ago, when people were able to walk out of concentration camps and somehow, again, miraculously, get to the land of Israel and be given weapons. And the next thing you know, they're free soldiers fighting for the independence of a country that seemed impossible just a couple of years before. We are a people that believe in transformation. We are a people that believe that transformation is absolutely possible. And sometimes it looks impossible. And it looks impossible, especially when you look at a Nachash and say, how in the world could a Nachash become a vehicle for something which will end up being liberating? Well, therefore, Moshe is the first Mashiach, as it were. Moshe is the first Goel. Moshe is the first one who's going to take the people out. And even Moshe will undergo this transformation. God is saying to him, I will put the words in your mouth. I will transform you from somebody who couldn't speak. The peh didn't work. And I will turn you to somebody who can say, pakod pakadati. I will teach you to be able to do this, and I will control things. And Moshe is standing there and having the same problem that a lot of us have. How is this even possible? How can transformations like this take place? How in such short periods of time can things change around rapidly? Well, God said, "Don't take that matat, throw it down, and it becomes this nachash. And now pick it up again, and the nachash can turn into the matat. Transformation is possible. The people where they are right now, it's temporary. No matter how we think that the Jewish people are so far from where they need to be, just realize a serpent could become a tool within the hands of Moshe to be able to fight. And therefore, when the Mishnah tells you, oh no, these are two things that are connected, Moshe lifting up his hand in the Makteh and the Nachash HaNechoshet, which is being used over there, and it says, no, this is the same idea, that's really the kind of thing which the Zohar understood, that there were two sides to this Mateh, as it were, and there is the side that represents the Nachash, and this represents the Shem Hashem, and there is this ability of this transformation to be able to take place. So, I'll say it again. There was a lot more that I wanted to say today, but I think that the basic idea that I was trying to get across, I think was very understandable, and we can see it, and that's what takes place by the Sneh. It is man's meeting with the infinite, which then makes the impossible possible. When Moshe is standing in front of a bush which is burning but not being consumed, that then is the element that transformation can take place, anything can take place. God says, I can put ideas in the thoughts of in the heart of Paro, I can put ideas in the people, I can put ideas in the Jewish people. God says, I can give a little bit of help, I can turn serpents into staffs, I can stand staffs into serpents, I can take the staff and you can hit something with it, and suddenly the Jews will be walking out of Mitzrayim and marching their way to Har Sinai and experience the infinite and be charged with the mission and all become shlichim and melechet kohanim v'goy kadosh. The problem is that sometimes we have a hard time believing it, and that's part of what we need to understand. There was a hint along the way over here. I don't know if you caught the hint. The hint was that he said, tell Yehoshua that he's going to continue this battle. Already right then, Moshe should have understood that he was not continuing the battle. The continuation of the battle was charged, Yeshua was charged with it, and Moshe was essentially being told, you're not going to be doing this. Again, how well we're listening to the hints is a question. But over here as well, when all those elements of Moshe's eventual failure are right there in this episode, we have to at least question, was it already over here that those seeds were planted? Was the decision already made? Because it may well have already been articulated there at the battle against, you know, against Amalek. But nonetheless, we need to believe in Am Yisrael. We need to believe in transformation. We need to believe in change. And if we have a hard time doing it, just remember one thing, that God is infinite and God is helping. And once that happens, then we should have complete and absolute emunah. And that's essentially the message of those two battles. Lift up your heads heavenward and you can have proper emunah.